Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hello and welcome to the Tank Slappers podcast, Autosport and the Motorsport Network's podcast for all things two-wheeled. I'm your host, Lewis Duncan, and joining me as ever is Oriol Puigdemont. And the MotoGP pre-season for 2021 has come to a close. We're just 2 weeks away from the first Grand Prix in Qatar, and it's a strange one, Yuri, because it's hard to know what we've learned, because Qatar's a strange track. You know, we haven't had any Moto2 rubber on track, so that affects things. We've only had 4 days of running, really. We lost a day because of the weather. It's really difficult to know where we stand. I mean, I think what's clear is that Ducati and Jack Miller are quick.
We have two main conclusions from this pre-season. In one hand, then three of the four Yamahas are really fast, really consistent. I'm talking about both official riders and Franco Morbidelli as well. And as you said, Dan Miller on the Ducati is really, really, really fast. At the same time, we've seen this kind of picture before. And then we will probably have Ducati and those Yamahas fighting for the top positions in the first and probably second race, but from then on, we don't know what we're gonna find.
It's interesting because Fabio Quartararo said on Thursday, I think he was asked about the new chassis, and you know, he said, "Look, my feelings on this bike are really good because there's a lot of grip on track. When we go to Portimao, places like that, I think we will struggle." Which is an interesting comment, I thought, because Fabio, of all the Yamaha riders, has seemed quite pessimistic about the bike. You know, he said, "I think Qatar, I'm scared about our overtaking potential. You know, the bike's not going to be good in glow grip tracks." But the pace in Qatar, as you say, was good. Maverick Viñales said the lap times came so easy on the new chassis. It's such a tricky... Yamaha has always been a mixed message manufacturer, but I can't fathom really where it stands. It looks like a good bike, but we don't know.
Yeah, I think they have a really good package there in Qatar, but the main question mark will be, are they going to be able to make a good start and to try to go away? Otherwise, they can be in trouble. If they find themselves mixed and in the middle of the mess, so that will be the main problem. And I think Maverick is really focused on that. And by saying that, in Maverick's head, it can be good to be focused on that. But at the same time, he can be obsessed too much because he can overthink about it. And it can have also a negative impact on him. Let's see.
Yeah, I think that's a very fair point. I think of all the Yamaha riders, or all the factory Yamaha riders, I think Viñales worked maybe the smartest of them all, sort of focusing a lot on his riding on the first couple of days on the old bike, and then going to the new bike. And it seemed that he was quite happy on that new bike, which he wasn't so much last year when he tried the 2020 package. But like you say, you know, he can get obsessed and...
Yeah, I mean, that's the main problem. We've seen that before in Maverick. I mean, we've seen that before. I would really like, you know, when... I think we've spoken about that in the last podcast, but again, I think it's important to clarify this. We've seen many times that when Maverick is in trouble, he struggles to come back, to react. And I would love, I would really love to see him being able to rise from a problem, like from a bad start, for example. And that's what I really wanna see from him.
I think if he can go to this Qatar race and he can get the good start he wants, and he can have a race where he's at the front for all of it and the pace is strong, I think that would be such a big, you know, mental breakthrough for Maverick, because he can then, he then knows that the bike is there for him. He's not going to hopefully have those same issues that he had before.
That's
in theory.
that's the thing with Yamaha. You never know. we've seen that before in other occasions. So that's why I think that we need to wait a bit, and then let's see how the Yamaha reacts. Well, last year in Jerez, I mean, they got 1 and 2, Fabio and Maverick, so they were like unbeatable after Mark's crash. But after that, problems appeared, and then they were into this kind of mess. Again, I'm not sure if it's more bike-related or head-related, but I think we're going to find it out, especially if Mark comes back soon.
There are promising signs and there are negative signs, which is...
Well, I think that's
which
what
is,
all
which
they
is nothing
say.
New.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there are some positive and some negatives. We're trying to work on the negatives and try to take profit on the positives, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah. I guess if there is one true positive, the fact that Valentino Rossi, having started the test saying the 2021 chassis is not great, to then say it turns a lot better than the 2020 chassis and it's good, if Rossi's happy, it's maybe not the true barometer of where Yamaha is at, but if Rossi is happy on a bike, it tends to be an all right package.
Yeah, well, yes, but I mean, in last seasons, I think it was normal that Yamaha was not only listening to him, because he was not the fastest Yamaha rider on the grid. So I think they had to open the point of view and try to and start listening more to the other riders. And now I think it's the right moment for doing that, because we all know that Fabio is super fast, and we all know that also Maverick is super fast.
Mm-hmm. For sure. I think what was apparent in Qatar as well is how quick the Ducati was. I mean, Zarco set an unofficial speed record. Jack Miller set an unofficial lap record. Miller seems the happiest I've ever seen him. You know, he's really comfortable on the bike. He's happy. He's happy in the team. You know, and they haven't, like, you know, we know they haven't made a big step forward because they can't. But Bagnaia said something interesting. He felt that Miller was cornering like he was last year. So it seems the biggest change has come from Jack rather than the bike.
Well, I think that Jack knows very well the bike. I mean, he's been riding this bike for 2 years, and now he really understands how the bike reacts. So it's his moment. I mean, he has to deliver. There's no other possibility, because otherwise the pressure will start to being really high on him. And let's see, because I mean, I remember I asked Paolo Ciavatti, I think it was like 2 weeks ago or 10 days ago, before the first precision test, and I asked him, after changing the lineup for this year, what's the main target for Ducati? I mean, have you changed your aspirations considering that Dovi is not here anymore? And he said, listen, Ducati's target is always trying to fight for the title, so they will have to fight for the title with this lineup, which means then Jack has to be, thanks to his experience, the main contender for Ducati. So yeah, it's his moment.
With Ducati, they have clearly over the winter and for 2021, they have had this change of philosophy. Gone is Dovi, gone is Petrucci. They've gone for a more youthful lineup. And it seems as well that that has injected a lot of, you know, motivation into the factory squad. It seems like a much more harmonious atmosphere between Jack and Pecco and Ducati management, and which can only be a good thing as well for the championship.
Yeah. I think it has to, and in the end, as you said, I think that we have seen a really good, beginning of this relationship between Jack and the team. Let's see, because at the beginning, I mean, it has to be like this. Otherwise, it would be a big nightmare if they start with problems.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, these first three races to Qatar and then Portugal, you know, these are places where Jack has gone strong in the past, and it's a place where the Ducati has gone strong. So there is really what he needs to be is winning, if not all three of these Grand Prix, he needs to be on the podium in all of them, minimum. So let's move on to Suzuki, because it was a bit of a weird test for them, I thought, because, I mean, Joan Mir didn't end up particularly happy. He wasn't happy that he lost the final day, which is fair enough. But, you know, he said he's only 70% ready. They've not done enough work on the new chassis, so he'll probably start on the 2020 chassis. And he didn't sound all that happy that there was a lot of work that went on for 2022 earlier in the test, because he said he tried a lot of things which didn't work and that he couldn't use. So it's a strange situation.
I think Suzuki really missed this last day of testing, because they were, how do you say that, they were planning to do some fine-tuning work.
Yeah,
so especially on the electronics, that's what Mir said, trying to put everything on place and trying to get the most of the package. So yeah, I think that they're gonna miss this final day, despite I think that they will have time enough during the first day of practice, FP1, to try to play a bit with the bike. But they will start the championship without a clear idea about which chassis they prefer. So yeah, I think that it shows that they are missing a bit of track time. And we were all expecting a bit more from both Suzukis, especially from the champion, because they have been there, but never on top, never between 1, 2, 3, the top three positions. So yeah, I think that even they were expecting a bit more from themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, Jack Miller said a couple of times he felt Suzuki hadn't shown their hand. And I guess that's true, because they didn't do a race run, or they didn't do any real long runs, neither rider. But I mean, when we get to the race, I mean, Alex Rins is pretty convinced he'll be there. And I think they probably will be. But, you know, if the fact that they're still having to go into the season still not sure about this 2021 chassis, which they think is better, but it's not as good as in the braking zones, you know, it's a lot of unnecessary kind of question marks they don't need when they have to try and begin a title defense.
Yeah, especially because they had time enough to try these big parts. I mean, you can have some doubts on the small parts, but I mean, having still big question mark on the chassis, it can be a bit of a, let's say, a worry. So yeah, let's see how they start, because I think in the end they will find a way, because don't forget that Suzuki never does a huge revolution on their bikes. So they just adjust the parts that they still believe that have a bit of margin. So I don't think that we're gonna see a massive difference between last year's bike and this year's bike, especially on the behavior, on the performance. So I don't think there will be any massive cliff on the performance.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Qatar was a good race for Suzuki in 2019. You know, yes. I rewatched that race a couple of weeks ago, and I forgot how high Rins and Joan Mir on his debut were running.
Yes,
really, really well. So we know.
I remember that race because it was the first race of Joan in MotoGP, and I remember speaking with Suzuki guys, and they told me, "Listen, we have chosen the soft tire in the case of Mir of Joan, just as a precaution." But otherwise, he would have been much in front.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Yeah, he was in that podium fight for a lot of it. So we know that when they get there, they can fall back on settings from 2019 a little bit, and they know that they'll be strong. So it's like you say, it's not panic stations yet. I guess the most surprising manufacturer of testing was KTM, because, I mean, we said in the first podcast we thought that maybe they were hiding something and it'll be fine, but as the second test went on, it didn't look that way. They looked like they were genuinely struggling. Miguel Oliveira was 1.3 seconds off the pace as the top KTM rider. Their long runs were okay, but not brilliant. They just didn't seem happy with the package. Oliveira said they were hitting a wall with setup and performance.
Yeah, I think that... I think this year we can see again the problems that KTM had last year on tracks that they haven't been testing. You know, I'm convinced that they will, once we will go to Jerez, they will be fast enough. Maybe what we have is we're going to see a huge change between this test and the first GP, and from the first GP to the second GP, because they will have time enough to analyze the data and to improve the bike according to this data. But, I mean, we've seen that before. On the tracks where KTM hasn't been able to test, they've been struggling even last year. So it makes sense. I mean, despite they have done changes on the bike, on the engine, blah, 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 I think that the soul of the bike remains the same.
Yeah, well, Brad Binder said the base settings are not really that different from last year, which is a bike that won 3 Grand Prix. Binder said that all riders seem to agree that it was a track problem more than anything. Qatar doesn't really allow the KTM to use its strong points of sort of turning with the brakes on and stopping. Which was the case last year as well. You know, like you point out, they didn't have a great Qatar test last year. Both riders said everything's worse than it seems, which I think is probably right. And I think when we get to Portugal especially, we will see them being a bit stronger. But it's just surprising given that there was all this fear about, they've got a super engine, they can do this, that. And they've not really made the big jump that was maybe expected, and certainly a lot of people were scared of.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, even the other teams were scared about this possibility. In the end, I don't see the point on trying to insist on opening the engine when it was frozen by regulation, and then just make small touches, because if you are allowed to open the engine, so you have, let's say, I wouldn't say broken the law, but you have green light to work on the engine. So what's the point? Or no, I'm just gonna do a few twerks.
Yeah.
So I don't get it.
I don't get it either. I mean, obviously they have to play a little bit with reliability because they have to use less engines, but reliability was never a problem for the KTM before. So that's the interesting thing, is that they talk like they've made these changes to make the engine more reliable, but I don't ever remember KTM having an engine problem. Maybe in the first season, but even then, I can't remember.
No, I can't remember either. So, no.
Yeah, definitely a strange one. I think one person that I think the field needs to be scared of now is Paul Espargaro.
Because, yeah, 100%.
I mean, we knew that he was going to go all right on the Honda because it's a bike that it suits his riding style, but we didn't expect after 4 days for him to be this good. I mean, his race pace was awesome. His one lap pace, we haven't seen the potential of yet, he's I think he can go to Qatar and certainly fight for the podium. Yeah. Whether he gets the podium is different, but I think he can be there.
Yeah, I mean, he can be there 100% because not only his adaptation to the Honda has been good, but has been smooth as well. So, because sometimes you can see a rider pushing, being so aggressive or forcing the situation, let's say this way, let's put it this way, forcing the situation. With Paul, all this process looked really natural, seemed really natural because the bike suits him really good. I mean, the bike adapts to him really, to his riding style really good. He's been aggressive all his career, and he had problems with a smoother bike like the Yamaha, but in KTM he was feeling really good and even better with the Honda. So I think he can do great things this year, and he said that already, that the, what did he say, the future looks nice. So yeah
100%. I mean, he admits he still needs to he admits 4 days wasn't enough, which, you know, that's
of
fair
course
enough.
I mean it's crazy. 2 years ago, if we think about it, about having a pre-season in the same track only for 5 days, that would be crazy. So yeah, I think in the end Honda has planified and has probably changed the approach to this testing, and I'm just guessing, but they have probably chosen the most important things, and I have decided to leave the less important things for the coming races. Like even Paul, I think he didn't try the new fairing, so that's why. I mean, he's just trying to be comfortable on the bike, and then step by step, he will make the bike more suitable for him.
Yeah, 100%. And you can't forget that he's coming to from two radically different concepts in terms of chassis. He's rode a steel chassis at KTM. You know, he's come back to a more traditional one. You know, that's probably a bigger adjustment than people realise. But what's interesting, I thought, is that, like you say, Honda's clearly changed the approach, but I think they've also, after last year, you know, they have made that chassis just a little bit more friendly, because it seems like most of the riders are going to run the 2020 chassis that Bradle raced last year, rather than the new sort of variant that was present in Qatar as well. So I think that shows just where Honda is at now in terms of, you know, the friendliness of the package. It's still difficult, but it's not maybe as hard as it used to be.
Yeah. I think it can be possible. So, I think it's KTM is the main question mark of this. KTM and Aprilia, because you never know what to expect from Aprilia. I mean, we've seen it that on the past. I'm sorry that I'm changing topic, but I mean, I think KTM and Aprilia, are the main question marks. KTM in a bad way, and maybe Aprilia in a good way.
Yeah, I think so. I think just finally, the rookies. I was asked a couple of weeks ago for an Autosport video, what's your wildest prediction? And I said, I think one of the rookie riders, one of the three Ducati rookies, can win a race this season, which, you know, I feel a little bit more confident about, because they were all three brilliant, especially Bastianini.
Yeah, he's really talented. I mean, he has this magic. Yeah. We've seen that before, and I think he can do some good results. He has to believe it. Mm-hmm. He has to believe on himself and believe that a good result is possible. And I think that at the moment, the good thing is that even in a, let's say, not top team like the Avintia, I'm not disrespecting, I'm just trying to say, with a low budget, so most modest, is that make any sense?
Yeah.
So you can even perform. I mean, we've seen that with Zarco Lazio. If they have the support from the factory, from Ducati, I think the package is there. And don't forget that Bastianini has the former Dovizioso's crew chief.
Mm.
So it is a good sign about how Ducati cares about this guy.
Mm.
So I think that we can have a good season from Enea.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know about you. Well, I'm sure you do, but I'm really excited now for the Qatar race because I think we're going to be in for a good one after what we saw in testing.
Yeah. I think that we can have a really, really, tight race. Let's see, because I'm really excited about it.
Yeah, for sure. We'll talk about all that, another week when we get a bit closer to the race. But for now, Yuri, thank you very much for your company. As always, appreciated. And thank you to the listeners for joining us. If you like what you heard, go listen to all of our other stuff on all your other podcast places. And you can read everything on Motorsport and Autosport from the test. A lot for you to read. And we'll be back soon to preview the 2021 MotoGP season. But until then, it's a very warm goodbye and keep looking after yourselves.
Into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.